listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating psychology, and I'm here to help you wake up and think about your day, not your diet. I used to be the poster child for eating disorders, and I broke free. I broke free. I cracked the code. And now I help people all over the world live a binge-free, happy life without counting a single calorie, carb, or fat gram. And on this show, I am here to help you do that too. So today, we're going to talk about mastering the art of self-compassion. So important. Let's talk about that and how it relates to your relationship with food. If we have time, I will open up the phone lines. If you're on the Instagram live feed, feel free to leave a comment anytime. All right. So look, are you sick and tired of struggling with food and weight? Do you constantly criticize yourself? Maybe you're always judging your body, your eating habits, your life choices. And if so, you are not alone. Many, many, many people are stuck in a cycle of negative self-talk that leads to emotional eating, which then leads to more self-criticism, which then leads to emotional eating to get away from your own mean voice, and the cycle just goes on and on and on. But the good news is it is possible to break the cycle. The key is to turn self-criticism into something much more productive and helpful, self-compassion. By cultivating an attitude free of judgment towards ourselves, we can break free from guilt, from shame around food, weight issues, anything else that causes negativity in your life and in the way that you relate to yourself. So I'm gonna show you how turning self-criticism into self-compassion is a crucial part of creating a happier life and a happier binge-free life. So the first step is awareness. I call it, aha, the light bulb moment. Realizing, oh my gosh, I'm really mean to myself. So the first step is challenging your self-critical ideas and becoming consciously aware of where your self-critical thoughts, feelings, and beliefs originated. So let me give you an example of Ileana. So Ileana constantly referred to herself as stupid and, oh, I'm such an idiot, whenever she talked about her life. She prefaced a lot of statements with comments like, I'm sure this is totally stupid, but. So in reality, Ileana was actually very bright, very thoughtful, very insightful. But as a child, her older brothers were always telling her how stupid she was. They were always putting her down. And her parents never objected or intervened. They were just like, oh, kids, they're just being kids. And Ileana interpreted their silence as agreement. So from her perspective as a child, her family clearly thought she was stupid. So that must be the truth, right? If your family thinks you're stupid, you must be stupid. They know you better than anyone. So Ileana started being mean to herself. She believed she wasn't smart. She was issuing disclaimers whenever she shared an opinion or an insight. She truly believed that she was stupid. So for Ileana, realizing that she had internalized the perspective of her older brothers was really eye-opening. And we explored what she would say to someone else who was teased or bullied by her older brothers and who developed a negative belief about herself. And Ileana declared she'd have compassion for that person. She would want to reassure them of their likability, their lovability, their intelligence. So developing that kind of insight is a really essential part of creating self-compassion. It involves awareness of the unconscious thoughts, feelings, and beliefs that drive our sense of self and our beliefs about ourselves, and then challenging them. Insight is just the first step, but insight allows ourselves to understand ourselves more fully and to make more conscious choices in our lives. So when Ileana was able to realize, oh, this is something I learned that I came to believe because I was told it, but it's actually not true. She could embrace a different view of herself and have more confidence in the world. And when she had more confidence in the world, when she felt better, she stopped using food to comfort herself. So practice self-reflection. Take some time to reflect on your experiences in the past and how they shaped you, as they did Ileana, without judgment. We're being curious, right? This is not about blame. This is about explain. So just as Ileana felt guilty, oh, I don't want to blame my brothers. It's not their fault. They were kids. They told me I was stupid. Kids do that. I don't want to blame them. Like, no, we're not blaming them. We're explaining. This happened. And because of that, it affected your way of seeing yourself. And as a result, this is how you've been living in the world. Let's explain it, not blame. But let's understand that in the service of creating change, right? So insight is the first, most important step. Next is identifying what's hidden. So our beliefs about ourselves are often driven by our unconscious mind. Like Ileana didn't consciously think, oh, well, I think I'm stupid because I was totally told that I was stupid by my brothers. My parents didn't say anything, and that's how I came to believe it. No, she didn't think that. She just thought she was stupid. So we want to look at what are the hidden motives or ideas about you that you may not even be aware of, but they drive so much of your way of feeling, your self-esteem, your way of being in the world. So anyway, this means becoming aware of why we think the things we think and why we do the things we do. So we often just repeat patterns that are self-defeating, or we hold ideas that are familiar but untrue. The familiar feels real. Reality is a construct, right? For the most part, our psychological reality. What feels real is what's most familiar. So as with Ileana, you can trace those patterns back to your earliest experience and relationships. And sometimes our families cast us in roles we never auditioned for, as the role of the problem child, the stupid one in Ileana's case, the underachiever, the golden child, or other such myths, right? These are just roles that we're cast in that have often very little bearing about who we are. But we go along in life playing that role or believing that other people see us that way when that may not be the case at all. Just as Ileana really thought she was stupid and she was sure that everyone else could see that she was stupid. No, it was quite evident she was not. She was bright, but she couldn't see that until she could see it. Okay, so also our earliest relationships form the basis for so much of our current dynamics. For example, fear of intimacy can be rooted in early experiences with rejection or abandonment. Once we have insight about where these ideas and behaviors come from, we can develop healthier patterns of relating to other people and to ourselves and to food. So developing insight isn't easy because it requires the willingness to explore difficult and often painful ideas, emotions. It's challenging to face the parts of ourselves that we've been trying to avoid, trying to deny. I don't want to look at that. It's also hard to recognize that our current present-day difficulties are rooted in earlier experiences that we may not remember or really fully understand. But it is so important. Remember, you want to be like a detective of your mind. How did I learn to view myself this way? What are the messages I got that have contributed to the way that I see myself today, or the way I imagine other people see me, or the way that I think that I should be behaving? Like, you know, where did I learn that I should sacrifice myself to take care of everybody else? This came from someone. No one is born going, I must sacrifice myself to take care of everybody else. I will remain empty. I will take care of everybody else. And then I will feel empty and food will fill the void. Nobody says that, but they just do it on autopilot. because of conditioning. So I want to recognize, what is that conditioning? Now, a question I get a lot is this: is it always about the past? And it's usually said with a, Dr. Nina, is it always about the past? Like, the past is past. Okay, so let me tell you about Kara. By the way, all Ileana, Kara, all the names I use in my examples, these are names that are disguised. These are not their the real person's names. So Kara started therapy adamant that she did not want to talk about the past. She said, I talked about my family for 10 years with my last therapist and nothing ever changed. I still struggle with binging. Talking about the past does nothing, she said. Well, she's right in regards to this. Talking about the past in the context of events that happened a long time ago, just talking about what happened, that does not help. I mean, it helps a little bit. You got to work through it, got to resolve it, but, you know, that doesn't take that long. To create change, it's really important to look at how the past influences our current lives. The past haunts our present. It impacts our relationship with ourselves, with others, and of course with food. So in Kara's case, she was the only child of parents who were in the film industry. They were always on location and they left her with nannies, very nice nannies, but the nannies were not her parents. And Kara felt lonely and she felt rejected, and she took up baking. When her parents were gone, and even when they came back, she would bake. And during those lonely times without her parents, she would comfort herself with baked goods. And as an adult, she had a series of relationships with unavailable men who did not make her a priority. You see where this is going? So she felt sad. She felt rejected. She felt abandoned. She felt unlovable. She ate for comfort. Kara believed that if she only lost weight, if she just lost weight, those men would want to be with her. So unbeknownst to herself, she had duplicated the original relationship with her parents. Whereas once she longed for her absent parents and hoped they would choose her instead of going to work, now she longed to be chosen by emotionally unavailable men. And her fantasy was, well, if I just lose weight, they'll want me. So recognizing how she was repeating the past instead of just talking about the past. Before, she'd been talking about, well, my parents, well, you know, they made movies. They had to go on location. As if it had no bearing on her current life. But once she recognized how the past was influencing her present, she began to feel compassion for herself. So we began healing the wounds of the past, and instead of being drawn to unavailable men, she started dating guys who were available and interested in her. She stopped binging, and she recently got engaged to a great guy. So there you go. All right, so how do we do this? If it's all about the past, haunting the present, but you're not sure how that works, let's become time travelers. Let's get in our DeLorean time machines. Oh, such a great movie. Love Back to the Future. I wanted a DeLorean time machine so badly. Okay, I digress. All right, so as you can see, our earliest experiences, our early relationships have a profound effect on how we see ourselves and how we relate to others and how we think others relate to us. And these past interactions, they shape our sense of self. They shape our self-esteem. They influence our relationship choices, as you could see from Kara. By being drawn towards unavailable men, emotionally absent men, she was hoping to heal the relationship, the original relationship with her parents, right? That's the unconscious wish. oh, if I was raised by these people who were absent and I longed for them, but they couldn't be there for me, I'll just find other people who are absent in a different way and I'll just get them to want to be with me and that will heal my original wound. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. So also kids who experience trauma or neglect blame themselves for that trauma or neglect, or they come to believe that they're not worthy of love. They're not worthy of care. Or a child who grows up with parents who constantly compare them to other people can develop a sense of inadequacy. I had a friend, growing up whose parents would always compare her to me. Why can't you get good grades like she does? Why can't you be da, 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 da? I mean, our friendship survived that, but her mother was always basically being like, why can't you be more like Nina? Which made my friend feel terrible about herself, did nothing for her self-esteem, right? Made her feel like she was less than. And then, of course, she compared herself to others later on. And these beliefs can become deeply ingrained. They can contribute to a pattern of self-criticism that persists as we become adults. Again, nobody is born hating themselves. Nobody's born hating their bodies. Nobody is born being self-critical. We learn to relate to ourselves in this way. We learn it. We're taught it. And for example, children who grow up with critical or emotionally unavailable parents or families in which there's like a misattunement, they learn to be critical as a way of coping with feelings of rejection or abandonment, or they learn to treat themselves as they were treated. They come to believe they're not good enough. They have to be perfect in order to be loved. And these beliefs get internalized as facts and carried into adulthood, leads to a persistent pattern of self-criticism. Can you relate to that? If you're on Instagram and you want to share a comment or a thought, please feel free. You know, is this something that you're relating to? So I think a lot of people, even people who don't struggle with food, can relate to this. When we're treated critically, when we don't feel good enough, when there's just a basic misattunement in our family, we come to believe it's us. We come to believe there's something wrong with us. And then we learn to attack ourselves. And when we most need comfort, we are critical. And self-criticism can actually take many forms, including self-judgment, negative self-talk, a tendency to focus on real or perceived flaws or shortcomings. And often that critical voice is very loud. We end up turning to food or binging just to escape that mean, harsh inner critic. Once you identify how you came up with this way of treating yourself, once you identify where you learned to be so harsh, so judgmental, so critical to yourself, the next step is to actively cultivate self-compassion. Okay, how do we do this? For one thing, stop mind reading. Building self-awareness means becoming more conscious of our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors. And when we're in challenging situations, we often have automatic thoughts or automatic reactions that are based on past experiences. For example, back to Ileana. She often believed that other people thought she was stupid. Nobody told her that she was stupid. Nobody had said that since her brother teased her when she was a kid. But she was certain that other people still perceived her this way. And this is a defense mechanism, actually, called mind reading. It's also a defense mechanism called identifying with the aggressor, in which you identify with the person who's treating you badly against yourself instead of taking your own side. So it's sort of both. But it's a form of mind reading also, when you think you know what's going on in the minds of others. So it's something that a lot of us engage in without realizing it. So consider the following kind of statements, like, oh, the statements that start with like, well, they probably think this, or I can tell they're judging me. I can tell, I know what they're thinking. Oh, she doesn't like me. I can tell. I know they're upset with me. I know it, right? Unless someone is actively showing that they're upset, you probably don't know what is going on in someone's mind. So if you've had similar thoughts, that's mind reading. Remember, you're not psychic. You actually don't know what the other person is thinking unless they articulate their words aloud. Maybe they're not thinking the worst of you. Maybe they're not judging you. Maybe they're not looking you up and down and thinking terrible things. Maybe they're thinking the best. Maybe it's somewhere in between. And maybe even if they are criticizing you, maybe they're wrong. Or maybe you don't care. What you think about you is the most important. Also, to cultivate self-compassion, so stop mind reading. You don't know what someone is thinking. Think about what you think of them. Like eyes out, not eyes on you. What do you think of them? That's what's important, because you know what's in your mind. You don't know what's in their mind. And generally, we don't mind read people in the best way. We don't generally think, they just think we're fabulous. They just think I'm great. Oh, I can tell they love me. Until we love ourselves, then we will have those thoughts. But if you're self-critical, then you probably are thinking when you mind read, it's your critical thoughts that you're thinking of other people. My parents were both very loving and very critical. Yeah. So, you know, that's a good point, because being critical parents does not mean you're not loving. It's, you know, sometimes parents, they're just trying to help, right? But the message is you're not, you did all this great. I love you, but this, and this. It makes us feel that we can't be good enough. It makes us feel that nothing is ever enough for the other person. And it makes us identify with that way of being treated. We become self-critical because that is what is modeled for us. That is what is taught to us. Okay. So next step, talk to yourself as you would a friend. The next time you catch yourself being hard on yourself, imagine what you'd say to a friend or loved one in the same position. So recently, Blake ate an entire pizza and got really upset. And this is what Blake said. Blake said, I am disgusting. I have no willpower. I have no control. I can't believe I keep doing this to myself. So I asked Blake what they'd say to a friend or a loved one who had eaten a whole pizza. And by the way, the reasons for eating the pizza were like, a hard day, real disappointment, feeling a sense of emptiness. So like there were reasons that Blake was eating that pizza to fill a void, let's say. So I asked Blake, well, what would you say to someone who'd eaten an entire pizza? And Blake immediately answered, oh, it was the best answer ever. Blake said, oh, I would tell my friend to be curious about why they ate the pizza. I'd tell them there had to be a reason and they should use this as an opportunity to understand themselves better. And I tell them, it's only pizza. It's not like they did something really horrible. Okay? Notice the discrepancy between, oh, I'm disgusting. I have no willpower, no control, blah, 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 blah. Mean, and what Blake would say to a friend. So Blake easily found compassion towards this friend, but struggled to be equally compassionate towards himself. Blake is a they, so that's why I'm saying they and not he or she. Just clarifying. I do know my pronouns. My mother would be like, she was listening right now, which she might be. So mom, listen, I'm saying they, not incorrectly, but actually in the common vernacular of our culture in which you don't say she, he. Sometimes it's they. Okay. Just a little glimpse into my own self-critical past. Okay, so often we can be harsh, critical, and hateful towards ourselves. Yet we react completely differently towards someone in the same situation. So if you wouldn't say it to a friend, a child, or someone you love, do not say it to yourself. Treat yourself as you would treat someone you care about. Self-compassion means treating ourselves with the same kindness, care, and understanding that we would offer others who are going through a tough time. And this means empathy, understanding, and a non-judgmental attitude. Because when you are responsive to yourself and kind to yourself, first of all, you're probably not going to eat the whole pizza to begin with. If Blake had been responsive to themselves about the situation, maybe they would have used words, comfort words, instead of pizza. Also, take care with your language. Example, Beth. Here's another one who the word disgusting comes up at least, like, I don't know, 3 times a day when I see people. People are always telling me that they feel disgusting. They're disgusted with themselves. Same with Beth. She looked into the mirror and she said to her reflection, "You're disgusting." When I said, please rephrase that from, an I language, as in I'm disgusting, she couldn't do it. She found it too harsh. This is because when we use the pronoun you, when we talk to ourselves from that second person pronoun, you're disgusting, it usually means our inner critic has taken control of our thoughts. So any negative self-talk, such as you're not good enough, you're gonna fail, they don't like you, that is an indication that your inner critic is speaking and is loud. That voice, that critical voice, makes us feel bad. And that leads us to using food as a means of escaping the voice, escaping our inner critic. So instead, we need to support ourselves by asking questions like, hey, what's going on with me? What do I need right now? What am I feeling? What would make me feel better that isn't in the kitchen? And also speaking positively to ourselves. Hey, I'm capable. I've got this. I like me. I can do this. So also practice speaking to yourself only in the first person I voice, and be sure to use a soothing, understanding tone. Even if you're saying things that are nice to yourself, like, oh, I really feel good about myself today, is different from you feel good about yourself, or you did a good job. If you're talking to yourself and you're saying something good, saying you did a good job is not quite as, like, you don't feel it inside as much as when you say, I did a good job. I'm proud of myself. Oh, yeah. Then it's more internal and not so distant. You is distant language. It's easier to be mean to ourselves when we speak to ourselves from that you voice. And it's easier to take in something good when you can, it's easy to take in something good when you can use the I voice as well. Oh, I'm glad you can hear me this time. Welcome back to the show. All right. And hi, everyone on Instagram. Since I've been practicing the new positive self-talk, I've noticed how critical the people around me are as well. I've been educating them. It's alarming how people talk. Yes. Oh, no apology necessary for the previous complication. I'm talking to different people if you're listening to this on the radio. So yes, it is amazing, because when you start recognizing, these voices as critical, as judgmental, you start hearing how critical and judgmental and dismissive people can be. And even lightly dismissive, or even nicely dismissive. Like, oh, it could be worse. Look on the bright side. Be positive. Like, being positive to yourself is different from thinking positively so that you won't feel upset. Like, it's one thing to say, oh, you shouldn't feel that way. You should just be happy for what you have. Just be positive. Yeah, that's totally dismissive. As opposed to, yeah, that situation is hard. That sucks. That's difficult. I am so sorry. How can I help? Like, that actually helps. The think positive does not help. That's different from being encouraging. Speaking positively to ourselves means being encouraging instead of discouraging. I've got this. I know this is a hurdle, or I believe in myself. I can get past this, or I'm really proud of myself, or I know what I have to do, and I've got my own side. I'm going to be with myself as I move forward. I know I could do it. Encouraging, right? Makes all the difference. Someone recently said to me that they didn't want to be encouraging because if they're encouraging, they'll be lazy. As if being encouraging will make them less motivated to get things done. And actually, it's the opposite. First of all, we can't hate ourselves into loving ourselves. And we don't motivate ourselves by being mean to ourselves. We don't motivate other people. We don't, I hope not, probably not. We don't say, what's wrong with you? Why can't you do that? Why haven't you already done that? Do something different. Oh my God, what's wrong with you? No, we say, hey, you can do that. Just like Blake, right? Mean to themselves, super nice to other people. So there's no correlation between being mean and getting more things done and being more productive. Being mean does not make you more productive. You are not motivating yourself. You are being mean to yourself. True motivation comes from encouraging. Also, get out of your comfort zone. A popular meme is nothing ever changes inside your comfort zone. That's why it is so important to learn to tolerate discomfort. We do this by identifying difficult emotions without judging them and learning to respond to ourselves in a new way. Oh, happy International Women's Day to you as well. To all you women out there, happy, happy International Women's Day. Take your power as women and use that power for good in the world and towards yourself. Okay, so criticizing yourself can often be a distraction from uncomfortable feelings. It's easier for many of us to attack ourselves and be disappointed in ourselves than it is to tolerate the reality that we might be disappointed with other people. The more comfortable you can be with being uncomfortable, the less likely you're going to use self-criticism or binging as a way of distracting from those difficult thoughts and feelings about other areas in your life. And it's kind of like this. You know, when you first go into a swimming pool and it's so cold and it's just like, what am I doing in this pool? Why did I get in here? And 2 minutes later, it's like, this pool is so fantastic. It feels so good, right? So at first, when we do anything new and challenging and difficult, it doesn't feel good. But the more we do it and the more we acclimate ourselves to it, the easier it gets. So what was once painful, difficult, and uncomfortable becomes the new comfortable. Just have to go outside the norm to expand the comfort zone out. So recognize that certain prohibitive or upsetting thoughts about other people or situations might be fueling your self-criticism. Many people, especially women, find it easier to, I call it the boomerang effect, to boomerang their feelings back on themselves. I am so mad at my, let me think, kids. Right? That's the one that some parents have a hard time with. I'm so mad at my kids. Oh, I feel guilty. I can't be mad at my kids. They're kids. They're doing the best they can. I can't be mad at my kids. No, actually I'm mad at myself because I ate a bunch of bagels, right? So that is turning uncomfortable thoughts and feelings about other people back on you. If you can just say, yeah, you know, I normalize it. Yeah, I'm mad at my kids, or I'm mad at my best friend, or I'm upset with my husband, or my boss is making me crazy. And you can tolerate the discomfort of feeling that way towards somebody else. That doesn't mean talking to them about it. It means just recognizing this is what you feel. What you do with those feelings is something separate from identifying and processing. By processing, I mean expressing it, not to the person. Journaling about it, telling someone else, saying, oh, my kids are driving me crazy. And then talking, and they'll say, yeah, me too. And then you have a big conversation, and then it's out. Then you don't have to turn to food and then attack yourself for eating. You know, you see how that works, the boomerang effect. Also, get rid of guilt. Guilt can fuel self-criticism. Guilt can fuel negative self-talk, and it can lead to a sense of unworthiness and self-doubt. We feel guilty about things we're doing. Oh, I ate all the Girl Scout cookies. Or things we're not doing. I didn't go to the gym. So there are different kinds of guilt also. So depletion guilt refers to a sense that if we do something for ourselves or meet our own needs, we're taking something away from others in some way. Self-guilt is a different kind of guilt, and it's the guilt we feel for just being and existing in the world, for having any needs. The sense is that by needing anything, food, nurturing, comfort, security, love, you know, financial abundance, whatever, we have needs, that we're exposing some deficiency in ourselves. We may even believe it's fundamentally wrong to have needs. Having needs makes us needy. So when we experience guilt, it's because we feel like we've fallen short of our expectations of ourselves, or that we haven't met other people's expectation of us. This leads to us feeling bad about ourselves, negative self-image, seeing ourselves as unworthy, inadequate. Then we become hypercritical of ourselves, focusing on our flaws, focusing on perceived weaknesses, berating ourselves for mistakes, only seeing ourselves in the worst possible way instead of having a more measured view. We feel guilty for mistakes. We feel guilty for anything that's not perfection. And since perfection is impossible, feel guilty all the time. So to break free from that cycle of self-criticism that arises from guilt, practice self-compassion. That means being kind and understanding to yourself, recognizing nobody is perfect, normalizing guilt and regret, because sometimes we do feel guilty, but let's put it in perspective. How guilty should you actually feel for eating pizza? Or how guilty should you feel for choosing to do something for yourself instead of sacrificing your time to go do something that, you know, a friend wants to do? I mean, how guilty should you feel? Not so guilty, I think. Put it in perspective. Also, flip the script on negative self-talk. Another helpful approach is to shift the way we think. We've been talking about that. The way we talk to ourselves, instead of putting ourselves down and criticizing our flaws and shortcomings, we can focus on the things we like about ourselves, our strengths, our accomplishments. So give yourself credit for everything that you have done well. Give yourself credit for the positive qualities you know you have. By praising yourself, you can cultivate a more positive and affirming view of yourself. I have some examples. Okay. So critical voice, I'm going to do like, what's the critical voice and what's the reframe? Ready? Okay. Don't we have to hold ourselves accountable? Yeah, we do have to hold ourselves accountable, but accountable to what? Right? I mean, what are you feeling guilty about? Like, hold it. Accountability is something that pertains to different areas of our lives. If we're at work and we didn't meet a deadline, guilt doesn't really help. Motivation helps. Okay, I didn't meet the deadline. What do I need to do differently? Guilt, no, you don't have to hold yourself accountable for overeating because it's not a crime. Overeating is not a crime. We feel guilty for crimes we have not committed. If you are feeling guilty for overeating or binging, you are looking at it the wrong way. You are looking at that you did it, not why. So if you, let's go back to the example of Blake who ate the pizza. He could berate himself. Oh, they could berate themselves. They could say all these things, bad, I have to hold myself accountable. Yeah, that doesn't help. But saying, okay, why did I eat that pizza? What was going on with me? What problem did that pizza resolve for me, albeit temporarily? Don't look at that you did it. Look at why. Because thoughts and ideas lead to feelings, lead to behavior. If you're only focused on the behavior, it will never change in the long run. So if you've been overeating, if you overate something, instead of saying, oh my God, I was bad. I feel guilty. This is terrible. I need to be accountable to myself. Say, let me be accountable to understanding what made me do that. Binging or overeating is a solution to the problem. It is not the problem. So you say to yourself, why? What was going on in my life? What was I feeling? What was I distracting myself from? Was I comforting myself? What was going on? Use my food moon formula to identify, express yourself. Use the prompts in my book, page 45 through 47, if you have the book. And by journaling or speaking to someone who's someone that you can, you know, trust with your feelings, and then learn to respond to yourself using my VERY technique. All right, so I hope that clarifies. Looks like she's got it. All right. So the critical voice is, ugh, I never get anything right. I'm a failure. Okay. Reframing that is, I've made mistakes. I've had some sex. I can't speak. I've had some successes as well. It's okay to make mistakes, and I can learn from them. How interesting that I just made a mistake as I was saying that. All right, so the critical voice is, I never get anything right. I'm such a failure. Oh my God, I suck. Flipping the script is, okay, I made a mistake, and I've made mistakes before. I've also had successes in the past. It's okay to make mistakes. I'm going to learn from them. But I'm also going to recognize that mistakes happen along with successes. Critical voice says, I am not good enough to take this on. I will never be able to do this right. I'll never be able to get this right. I'll never be able to do this. Flipping the script, I have got the ability to learn new things. I have done it before. I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to keep trying until I get it right. Critical voice, I am never going to find a partner. I'm going to be alone forever. I'm going to be that old lady with cats. Nothing against people with cats. This is just something I've heard in the past. All right. Flip the script. I've had some bad experiences and some good ones. I'm going to keep putting myself out there until I find the right person. Critical voice. Oh, I'm so stupid. I'm such an idiot. I can't believe I did that. Oh my God. Flipping the script. I made a mistake. Yeah, I made a mistake, but that does not mean I'm stupid. I'm going to take responsibility and do better in the future. Critical voice. I'll never be able to stop binging. I will never, ever be able to stop binging. Or you're saying to yourself, even worse, you'll never be able to stop binging. Flipping the script. It's challenging to create change, but I am working to understand why I'm turning to food, and I am learning new ways of responding to myself, and I'm going to celebrate all my progress along the way, right? By reframing self-criticism, you challenge those negative beliefs about yourself, and you create a more positive and self-affirming mindset. When we're harsh and critical to ourselves, we feel shame, we feel guilt, we feel depression, anxiety, self-doubt. And these feelings are so overwhelming, and they lead to negative coping strategies like binge eating to quiet that voice, to make it shut up, to escape that inner critic. So self-compassion is a very powerful tool to combat self-criticism. And by using self-compassion, responding to yourself in that way, you're not going to want to escape yourself. You're being nice to yourself and you're making yourself feel better. You're not going to be like, oh, I got to get away from myself. I got to eat some ice cream. By being kind to ourselves, we feel better. That has a huge impact on our self-esteem. So I really want you to look at like the way that you talk to yourself, the words you use, the ideas you have about yourself, and recognize where it comes from. Challenge it. Is it a truth that you've come to believe in? Or is it something that you can reframe, flip the script on? Maybe the ideas that you have about yourself are wrong. It's something you learned. What you learn, you can unlearn. We learn this way of relating to ourselves. As you can see from my example, Ileana learned that she was stupid when she wasn't stupid, you know? And when you can see the truth about yourself and break out of a role that you were cast in or that you came to believe that you were in as a child or younger years in your life, at a younger age in your life, you could see yourself with more clarity, see who you are now and support yourself. We don't motivate ourselves by being cruel. We don't motivate ourselves by being nasty and critical and judgmental. We make ourselves smaller when we do that. We make ourselves feel shame. And shame is the sense that there's something wrong with you. Guilt is, oh, there's something wrong with what I did. I shouldn't have eaten that. I shouldn't have said that. You know, I said that, it hurt this person's feelings, or I ate that. I feel bad about having eaten that. You know, it wasn't the healthiest. But shame is, I feel bad about myself. I'm a bad person. I'm a mean person. I have no willpower. I have no control. Then you feel bad about your essential self, which is a horrible, horrible way to feel a sense of shame. Want to actually switch shame to guilt instead of, I feel bad about myself that I eat that. I feel bad about me that I overate. First, you want to also be curious, like, why did I do it? Right? Ask why. Focus on why, not what. But also look at, like, if you've got to feel bad about something you did, not because of something you are. Okay, I did that. Feel bad about it, but I'm learning a new way. And I'm going to really support myself as I learn this new way of being in the world. You cannot hate yourself into loving yourself. It does not work that way. So really think about where your inner critic came from. Are you turning to food to get away from your inner critic? Whose voice does that inner critic remind you of? Because, you know, with Ileana and the stupid, she realized, oh, you know, she's calling herself names. That's her brother's voice. She'd internalized her little brother, like her 10-year-old brother was in her head. You know? And often when we're, you know, when we're treated in a critical way, we become critical of ourselves. So what was once relational between you and the critical person, then that becomes between you and you. So whereas once it was, oh my God, my parents are so critical. I can't do anything right. It's just so upsetting. I wish that they would acknowledge me and see me. I wish they would stop tearing me apart and nitpicking on me, right? Then we become like the parents to ourselves. And we say that to ourselves. Why didn't you do that? Do that more. Do that less. Be accountable. And again, I can't stress this enough. Accountability has nothing to do with our behavior with food. If you are doing something you don't want to do, it's not about accountability. It's about understanding. Be really compassionate, not critical. Why did I do that? Insight is the first step. It is not the last step, but it's the first step. Why did I eat those whatevers? Why did I eat everything in the pantry? What was going on with me? What was I feeling? What was I thinking? What was I distracting myself from? Was I making myself numb? Was I turning off my self-critical voice? Was I filling a void? Was I turning emotional pain to physical pain? What was going on with me? Be curious. Insight is the first, then expressing yourself, then responding to yourself. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. And if you want a deeper dive into any of the topics I talked about today, get my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in all formats, including Audible, and I read it to you. Stay curious, not critical. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.